to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The federal government set aside more than $31 billion for tribes and tribal programs in the latest coronavirus relief package. It's the largest amount of federal aid allocated to tribes, and it's aimed at offsetting the toll of the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll hear about some ways tribes are planning to use the money to get back up to strength. We'll also get a perspective on what potential burdens lie ahead. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Lakota couple is suing a Nebraska school district saying their family's traditional Lakota beliefs and practices were violated when their children's hair was cut without permission. The lawsuit was filed Monday by the ACLU of Nebraska. It alleges a Cody Kilgore Unified School employee cut the hair of two elementary students multiple times in the spring of 2020 during head lice checks. According to the lawsuit, this continued even after the family raised concerns. Parents Alice Johnson and Norma Leroy say long hair is part of their culture and religion and should only be cut under specific circumstances by select individuals. The lawsuit argues the school violated the family's First Amendment right to follow their religious beliefs and their constitutional right to due process, and deprived the students of the right to an education free of racial discrimination. The lawsuit is seeking damages. New Mexico's governor recently signed an order to establish the next phase of the state's task force on missing and murdered indigenous women and relatives. The order expands membership of the original task force and brings on new representatives. The task force will work on a state response plan. Christine Means, task force project assistant, says the next phase builds on findings laid out in a report to state officials and lawmakers last year.
The overall goal really is to find that long-term solution, that long-term support of what it is that the task force's role is in the state of New Mexico. What is the role that it plays with tribes, with the New Mexico Indian Affairs Department, with the government of the state of New Mexico? So I think that in the initial year of findings, some recommendations were able to come out of it. And now it's prioritizing those action items and starting to put them into effect so that they can be enacted.
The task force was established in 2019. A final report was released in late 2020 following a series of public meetings and data collection. The executive order allows the task force to continue its work to develop a plan on how to implement the final report's recommendations. The cancellation of the cruise ship season in 2020 due to COVID-19 has impacted Alaska Native communities, which rely on tourism, says the president of the Huna Totem Corporation. Russell Dick testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs last week, saying if they don't see a cruise ship in 2021 in Huna, it will be devastating. He says there are limited economic opportunities in the community, which is not connected to a road system and runs on diesel power. Dick says the cruise ship industry has created jobs and a tax base, contributing millions of dollars to the community.
As we all know, the CDC shut down the cruise industry in the U.S., and to date, it is the only major industry not operating today. In 2020 alone, that shutdown meant the loss of at least 500,000 guests and their economic contributions of nearly $10 million to our community. Icy Strait Point normally employs over 250 people during the season, with nearly 80% local and Alaska Native hire, all in a community of less than 800 people. All of those jobs were non-existent in 2020, and all of those jobs are non-existent today. So it's been over 20 months since Alaska has seen a cruise ship, and our 2021 Alaska cruise season is also in peril, which will continue to devastate the communities throughout Alaska like Huna that depend on tourism.
Dick says a restart to cruising in Alaska is critical, as the season is only 5 months long, May through September. He's seeking federal help, including funding through Native American loan programs and legislative reform to alleviate some restrictions on cruise ships. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Western Governors University, where students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner with little or no debt. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Sherfoot Tui. The latest round of coronavirus relief money from the federal government is almost $2 trillion. More than $31 billion of that will go to tribes and tribal programs. Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz, the chairman of the U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee, calls it the largest one-time investment to Native communities in history. $1 billion will be divided evenly among all 574 federally recognized tribes. The Indian Health Service, Native HUD housing programs, and Native education efforts are among the larger single recipients of the money. The Bureau of Indian Affairs, tribal child care programs, Native businesses, language revitalization, and domestic violence programs will also see a significant infusion of dollars. More than a year of disproportionate devastation to Native nations, is the money enough and in time to relieve the ravages left from the pandemic? And what relief are you hoping to see? If you want to join our conversation today, give us a call. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And to start us off, we are going to connect with Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, who's on the line with us today. President Nez, thank you for being with us. Welcome to the program.
Hi there, Kara. This is Jonathan Nez, President of the Navajo Nation.
Well, President Nez, thank you for being with us. And just let's start off. What do you think about the current allocation of relief money? Is it enough for tribes to recover from the pandemic?
Well, thanks for that question, Tara. And I think, you know, this is a start. There has been some neglect in support to Indian country for many, many years. You know, even the inception, the start of the Indian Health Services, you know, that there has been underfunded. And we got an infusion of funds through the American Rescue Plan Act. And you know, I think here on the Navajo Nation, we're looking at utilizing those dollars for infrastructure. You know, it's no secret 30 to 40% of our Navajo people don't have running water or electricity. And what we want to do is, you know, expand that broadband telecommunication. Of course, there's a lot of money going to the schools, BIE and state schools. We're looking forward to, you know, many good things, many good projects to happen with this rescue plan funds. And, of course, the CARES Act fund has also assisted in building water lines, expanding electric lines, and even having some broadband telecommunication towers built here on the Navajo Nation. So it's a start. There's a lot of needs in Indian country. There's a lot of needs all across the country, but with the help of our congressional delegations and the White House with our new president, our new vice president, you know, this is a great way to have, you know, our Native American indigenous communities kind of catch up. I don't think it's enough to catch us all the way up to 21st century, but like I said, it's a start.
And President Nez, your thoughts on the first $1 billion being distributed evenly among the federally recognized tribes, your thoughts?
Well, I think $1 billion going to each of the 574 tribes throughout the country is needed to help, you know, rebound from what Indian country went through, you know, big economic loss. Here on Navajo, you know, we're still in a closure. Our visitors are not allowed. We still have the mask mandate. So our economy has been hit hard. But I think at the same time, our message of staying local and buying local has resonated because our shopping centers here, you know, have some very strict protocols than those off our nation. So $1 billion equally distributed will begin the process to recovery. And, of course, that other $19 billion will be distributed based on the Treasury's formula, based on population, based on based on tribal employees, and also the enrollment. So big tribes like the Navajo Nation will get, a good amount of dollars through the ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act, and we're looking forward to getting some of these needed projects complete here on our nation.
And President Nez, just seeing that there is definitely a difference in distribution or even just considering what tribes or what entities are involved in all of this, it's different. Your thoughts, is this a result of lessons learned?
I guess you can say lessons learned from our relationship with the federal government from the past, and you can go to lessons learned from the CARES Act distribution. You know, all 50 states get federal funds based on the size and the population of the state, and, you know, that shouldn't be any different for tribes. You know, we got hit hard here on the Navajo Nation. Maybe that should have been also another factor, you know, how hard hit a tribal community was. And we're still dealing with that today. I'm actually right now in Kayenta, Arizona for a vaccination event where we opened up vaccinations for our 12 to 15 year olds, and a great turnout today, you know. And I see some of the parents that were on the fence now wanting to get the vaccine because their young people are asking to get the shot because they want to go back to school. They want to hang out with their friends. And so parents have to, you know, consent to getting their young person vaccinated. So they're already here. So they say, give me the shot too. So that's a positive thing that's happening here on the Navajo Nation. And we're seeing some good turnouts once again for vaccinations.
And President Nez, on the same lines, the CDC recently announced a recommendation that adults who are fully vaccinated do not need to wear masks. The mandate is different there on the Navajo Nation. Any thoughts and any reflections on these new CDC guidelines?
Well, Tara, as I mentioned in some other interviews, you know, we here on the Navajo Nation have really followed the older CDC guidelines from 2020, you know. For example, 6 feet social distancing is still in place here on Navajo, even though CDC shrunk that to 3 feet, 3 foot, and including the mask. Masks are required, have been required since April of last year, and that has stood throughout this pandemic. And it still stands today, even though CDC is saying, I know a couple months ago they said, well, if you're indoors and two groups are fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. No, not on Navajo. We still wear a mask. And just last week they said you can check the masks if you're fully vaccinated indoor and outdoor. And we said, no, we're going to continue that. And right now there's no confusion on the Navajo Nation. People have to wear masks. And you see the confusion happening all across the country. Some institutions, some organizations, some companies are mandating masks to be worn and others not. So there is a lot of confusion throughout this country. But here on Navajo, the mask mandate stays. And we've been receiving a lot of good comments from positive remarks from our constituents. And stay the course. We got hit hard, and let's slowly move towards reopening. And that's what we've been doing here on our nation.
And I can see how that input goes into just making decisions. And President Nez, coming to this point where this current funding is coming, was there ever a moment where there was consultation with tribes on how to do this, how to best do it, maybe even what really needed extra funding? Anything like that you can share?
Yeah, I mean, with this new administration, the Biden-Harris administration, much consultation has happened since the swearing in of the new president and vice president up to today. You know, we're even having tribal consultations on the actual tribal consultation policies, which hasn't been done in a long time, and we appreciate that. And with the ARPA monies, the CARES Act monies that are still waiting to be distributed, we also have had tribes comment. But 574 tribes, right? That's a lot of consultation, and sometimes not everybody is able to comment verbally. So a lot of these are written comments that the feds receive. So I think at this point, from the lessons learned from the CARES Act distribution with the ARPA distribution, we've learned a lot. So I see some of that, those recommendations that the tribes have done be put in place for the American Rescue Plan Act funds distribution. So I'm happy with it at this point, and we'll just see how Treasury will, I'm hoping they don't amend their guidelines there every so often, just like they did with the CARES Act, but to follow through on the federal register's information. So we're hopeful.
Well, thank you for that, President Nez. And I know you got to get going here, so we do appreciate you kicking off the hour with us. And we're going to get deeper into this, talking a little bit more about the current coronavirus relief fund and how it'll be applied to tribes. Maybe this is something that you're already talking about in your own tribal community. Maybe your tribal leaders have told you exactly what their plans are for distributions. Or maybe there's a project that got started with the first round of relief funds, and now it's going to get a second round. Anywhere you fall in between or even beyond some of those things I just mentioned, you can join us, share your thoughts, ask your questions at 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We definitely look forward to your calls. And during the break, we'll keep the phone lines open, so go ahead and dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. Phone lines are open. Inupiat educator Dr. Pearl Brower is an education leader in Alaska. She's been a college administrator at a tribal college in Alaska, and most recently was in the running for chancellor of the University of Alaska, Anchorage. We'll talk with her about how she believes Native students can succeed in higher education. That's on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on StrongHeartsHelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about federal coronavirus relief money for tribes today. And what would you like to see your tribe use the money for? Give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And here with us today out of Phoenix, Arizona is EJ John. He is a research and policy analyst at the American Indian Policy Institute at Arizona State University and a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Our pleasure to have him here. EJ, welcome.
Good morning, Tara. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Also, too, out of Boston, Massachusetts, is Eric Henson. He is an executive vice president at Compass Lexicon, and Eric is also a research affiliate for the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. And Eric is Chickasaw. Our pleasure to have him here. Thank you for being with us, Eric.
Thank you for having me on today.
And so, gentlemen, I'd like to go deeper into, you know, where things currently stand. Of course, understanding how all of this is broken down. I've thrown out a couple of numbers. If you Google some of this, you get several pots of money. And so let's just go ahead and just understand more about this. And so, Eric, I turn to you. Give us an overview of this round of funding and exactly how it's going to be connecting to tribes.
Sure. As we sort of alluded to in the first few minutes of the show here, there's $20 billion that are going to go directly to the tribes. And that first $1 billion is going to be equally distributed among the 574 federally recognized tribes. And then the remaining $19 billion is going to be divided between the tribes based on a weighted allocation that's 65% derived from enrolled population counts and 35% derived from employment, tribal employment. And so that will account for the total of that $20 billion. And then the legislation itself included around $12 billion other dollars that are directed largely towards tribal expenditures like BAA and IHS and things of that nature. So in total, it's around $32 billion that was in the legislation, and it's a fairly substantial investment in Indian country.
And your thoughts, that amount of money, is it enough?
It is a good investment to begin to address, I think, as President Nez called it, the long neglect that Indian country has faced. I don't think it's enough to replace the damage done from the coronavirus pandemic itself, and it's certainly not enough to deal with the downturn that tribal economies and tribal governments faced from the emergence of the coronavirus, plus the longstanding 100-plus years of, you know, underinvestment in all sorts of important aspects of Indian country. It's an excellent way to start filling in that hole that's been dug over many decades. It's not in and of itself sufficient to bring all of Indian country up to, say, the average socioeconomic indicators for the rest of the United States population.
Thank you for that, Eric. And if you have questions for him too, dial in 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And EJ, of course, your thoughts on what has been allocated to tribes.
I think I would agree with Eric. I think it's a good first step, and it's a very substantial, first step investment into Indian country to try to address a lot of these issues, not only from coronavirus, but also from kind of the longstanding issues that we've seen on Indian country, especially because there's a special category in this money that can be used for water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. And so those are some very outstanding needs on Indian country to make sure that people have their basic services. And they're also connected to future infrastructure like internet and telecommunications. So I think that's a good indicator that there's some focus and some attention on these issues that have been on Indian country.
And so when we think of all of this and understanding where to go, we take reference on what happened the first round with the CARES Act. And Eric, is there anything you want to share with lessons learned? Of course, the first one, there was issues with the way populations of tribes were counted. Any thoughts about moving forward? Any changes we're seeing in terms of this?
Sure. That's a great question. And as I think many of your listeners might know, it appears that Treasury really did learn some lessons from the CARES Act. I consistently salute the prior administration for acting swiftly and including tribes in the CARES Act, but I think there was such a quick maneuver to put that in place, there wasn't very much thought about the allocation and implementation. One of the very most obvious differences between the CARES Act and the ARPA funding is a much longer time frame for tribes to prioritize and spend the money. When the CARES Act was enacted, it called for the money to be spent by the end of the calendar year last year, and that was a really, really difficult deadline for many tribes. A lot of this money has a much more, a three-year window up to the end of 2024, so tribes will hopefully have a much better chance of really prioritizing, planning, budgeting, weighing different projects and selecting the ones that are going to return the most bang for their buck as they invest in things, like EJ mentioned, just critical infrastructure. And those of us at Harvard who kind of followed this have argued in public and in writing, the Treasury ought to be pretty expansive in its consideration of infrastructure. We wrote a paper about 5 weeks ago pointing out that, you know, infrastructure depends upon complementary infrastructure. So if you are taking on your water, broadband, and sewer needs, you might really have to upgrade your electrical service to make sure those explicitly delineated expenditures that are allowed are you know, able to operate and be maintained. And you, again, you want the tribes to get the most bang for these dollars, so you don't want to artificially limit them in Treasury's sort of review and approval of the expenditures process. And we think Treasury should take a very broad view and let tribes prioritize as they see fit.
And is there anybody or champion of this who spoke out that got to the right ears to have this happening? Or is there something else? How did we get to the point where this is in there? Because as you just explained, all of the drama it created before. Any thoughts, Eric?
Right. I do think the incoming administration was very cognizant of how very quick action, even well-intended, can have some unintended consequences. And as some of us know, you know, there's still some litigation swirling around some of the allocation of the CARES Act money that was supposed to be spent last year. And I don't think anyone wanted a repeat of that. It's really inefficient for all the parties involved. It's kept a non-trivial amount of money from being distributed from the CARES Act itself. And I think the current administration, the Treasury Department, is trying to do its very best to not repeat those inefficiencies and create another round of litigation unnecessarily.
And let's go deeper. Tell me about Alaska Native Corporations too, and how it'll work for them, and their inclusion in all of this. Go ahead.
Sure. So there's still some pending question about the inclusion or exclusion of the ANCs as tribal entities under the CARES Act. ARPA explicitly mentions the 574 federally recognized tribes. So by implication, the ARPA money is not directed explicitly towards the ANCs. Now, more than 200 tribal entities are on the list of the 574, so there will be some money going towards the couple hundred plus Alaskan tribes and villages. And I think one of the things that ARPA did as well that wasn't contemplating CARES, it really will help some of those very small and rural areas, is this allocation of the $1 billion among all the tribes equally. That plays out to a little bit more than $1.7 million per tribe. So even very small populations in very remote areas will get nearly, you know, a couple million dollars just from that first slice, and then they'll get another allocation based on enrollment and employment. And I know in some of those places, if enrollment's very low and employment might be very low, that might not be a big slice. But as opposed to CARES, where some tribes with significant populations only got $100,000 from the population part of the allocation, here we're starting all the 574 tribes with more than $1.7 million each. And I think that was a sensible adjustment and one of your lessons learned for sure.
Well, thank you for that. And again, lessons learned. We know tribal leaders listen to this program. Any thoughts you have on this round of coronavirus relief? Funds coming to tribes? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We definitely look forward to your calls. And EJ, your thoughts about the way some of this is being distributed. And there aren't direct payments to tribes on some aspects. And instead going to places like Indian Health Service. Your thoughts about this or explaining why it works this way or any obstacles because it's going directly to some of these entities that are connected to our Native nations. Go ahead. Anything you want to share?
I think that the way that it was set up was to try and establish the most equitable way to serve all of Indian Country. Of course, having 574 different tribes, you know, that's 574 sets of unique needs. And some tribes would benefit more from having these programs like IHS, like HUD, fully funded to serve their tribes rather than having the money going directly to tribal programs that may not be established yet. So I think the bill really tried to fund all areas that are kind of relevant to Indian country, not just tribes themselves, in order to try to really get help out there to address the negative effects of the pandemic.
And so, EJ, there's a lot to cover with all of this. Anything significant that you'd really like to point out to listeners, either understanding how these funds are going to be allocated or even just what it means to get these funds? Any thoughts?
I think that, the first and foremost, the biggest need that's addressed by these funds is the negative impact of the pandemic. Indian country was just very, very significantly affected by everything that happened with not only in terms of healthcare and people getting sick, but with tribal industries, tribal economies being severely affected, and just communities just really, really devastated by a lot of the effects of the pandemic. So the money that's coming down is really to try and address those and try to just help people with the hard times that they're facing, whether they were they lost employment, whether there's still healthcare needs out there, whether there's needs to, like I said before, water and sewer. Those are still needed to fight the pandemic. The pandemic isn't over. We're still in it. So a lot of tribes are really need these resources. And so that is kind of what it's about at the end of the day. But also at the same time, it is a significant investment. And I think overall, it's a real recognition of the capacity and the ability that tribes have to address the pandemic, to really just make the right decisions and do what's best for their own communities. One difference between this money, a significant difference with this money than with the CARES Act money, is there's a lot of leeway in this money for tribes to decide how they want to spend it. How do they want to use this money to address the negative effects of the pandemic? So I think that's a real recognition of the abilities that tribes have to do good for their communities.
And how the tribes want to use the money. That also is another big topic in all of this. EJ, is there anything you want to share about the way tribes are using this money, or some of the parameters that you see, or just any thoughts on how tribes are planning to use this? Maybe you have even heard tribal leaders or tribal leadership voice. This is what we're going to do with this next round.
Yeah, sure. I think we at the American Indian Policy Institute have paid a lot of attention to what's going on with broadband, and we see a lot of tribes talking about how they want to expand broadband coverage, how it's really greatly needed to connect community members to some of the barriers that we have today, things like telehealth setups, remote learning, remote work. Those were some of the ways that people can mitigate the effects of the pandemic, but they weren't really available to Indian country. And so that was really seen as a high need by some of the tribal leaders and then tribal folks that we've heard from over the last couple months. So there is money in here specifically to build out broadband infrastructure and to try and get Native Americans and Indian country more connected and able to access some of those broadband benefits and broadband services that are available out there.
And EJ, we know there are some other elements that are getting funding, things like education. Let's start there, because there's some more that I want to pick up after the break. But any words on money going towards education for our tribes?
Yes, money going towards education, I think altogether, is a little over $1 billion from the 31 that's allocated to Indian country. So a majority of that is going to be going to the Bureau of Indication, to BIE, and that's going to go towards things like school operations, going to about $500 million of that, a little over $500 million that would go to K-12 schools based on a formula, and then about $200 million of that would go to tribal colleges, also based on another formula. So the money that is kind of marked for education, a lot of it will be going to BIE schools and tribal colleges.
All right, thank you for that. And Eric, any quick comments before we go to break? Got about a minute.
I would echo EJ's sentiment about how great flexibility is needed here and seems to be contemplated by the legislation, because each tribe is so differently situated, and some tribes might need broadband in really remote areas, where other tribes might need to shift away from testing back to operations inside tribal business facilities and things of that nature. So each tribe's individual situation is going to really dictate the need for some flexibility and use of these funds. And it's going to be exciting to see that play out over the next couple of years.
And that comes to you again, the listener. We hope you'll dial in and share. Maybe there are some innovative approaches you know your tribal leaders are going to take with this round of funding for relief from the pandemic. Share your thoughts today. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. How much has it impacted your tribe, your nation? What about things like education? We just heard about broadband. What are your thoughts about all of this? How much has not having good broadband hindered you, your ability to do your work, the ability for your student under your roof to be able to connect and do their homework, connect with their teachers and their classmates to do things that they needed to do this school year? You can share thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And maybe you even received a payment from your tribe because of past relief funds from the pandemic. How did you use it? And what do you think about this one? You can give us a ring. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And again, if we have tribal leaders who are in the listening audience today, we sure hope you will also call in and share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Phone lines are open. We're ready for you.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, who have been providing scholarships and other support to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Scholarship applications for the upcoming school year are being accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org, or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Application deadline is May 31st.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we appreciate you being on the other end of these airwaves. And we are talking about coronavirus relief funds coming to tribes. Have you read about some of this? Give us a thought. And of course, anything that you've heard on the program so far today, if you want to comment on anything, give us a ring now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And on the line with us today, out of Phoenix, Arizona, is E.J. John. He's a research and policy analyst at the American Indian Policy Institute at Arizona State University. He's also a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Here, too, from Boston, Massachusetts, is Eric Henson, and he is an executive vice president at Compass Lexicon. And Eric is also a research affiliate for the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. And Eric is Chickasaw. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. And let's jump into some of these other hubs that are set to receive money. And for you, Eric, any thoughts about what's being set aside for language and culture? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's some money that's being directed towards these categories that kind of get overlooked sometimes because people are running around worrying about just, you know, jobs and employment and putting food on the table. But tribes in particular, you know, compared to, say, the money that these relief funds are dedicating towards states and municipalities, tribes have a real interest in protecting their culture, investing in their language retention. And it's encouraging to see that the legislation from the federal level is addressing these important issues. You know, we found in our research that focusing on culture and maintaining language actually leads to better economic and governmental outcomes for the tribes. And so these are critical dollars as well. It's really an important thing that could have been overlooked, but it wasn't here. So that's encouraging.
And how do we get to this point that this is even put into all of this? Is there a champion who fought to make sure this was there?
I don't know. You know, I wasn't in the room in the drafting, but, you know, there's some like ANA grants and things that, that specifically deal with language retention and language revitalization. Those, and that's, and some of these different categories, as opposed to the money that's earmarked for direct transfer to tribes, some of these categories that are going towards like the Bureau of Indian Education and things of that nature have no actual timeline. The funds are going to be available until they're expended. So that also is a useful way that the legislation contemplates getting the money out there in a way that will help tribes without this time pressure that we saw under the CARES Act.
Well, thank you for that. You know what? We're going to go to the phone lines. On the line is Greg out of Acoma Pueblo, tuned in on KUNM here in New Mexico. Greg, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead, share your thoughts. You're on air.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate giving time to topics such as these. I'm a former tribal official for my Pueblo, and one of the things that I found in my experience was the difficulty in linking up to these sources of fundings and programs and so forth. One of the words that was mentioned earlier was the formula. And I don't, at that time, I didn't know how to engage into what formula was being used so that my Pueblo could receive the fundings for that particular program or funding source. And so I find that sometimes to be a bit common, especially for those Pueblos, tribes, and nations that are smaller in number, that do not have the larger infrastructures, if you will, to engage with the federal government and its variety of sources and programs. And I just want to, I would just, the point being is that I would like to see maybe just someone, like a one-stop shop place, I guess, if you will. I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, and I know it's not that simple, but somewhere where a tribal official can call and inquire about, for example, broadband. I mean, we at the Pueblo of Acoma have no infrastructure for it. We don't. And what we do have is very limited, and it's not for the residential area and so forth. So there's still a long way to go, for example, in my particular Pueblo. And I certainly will want to get as much information as I could to provide what services our people should receive when programs like this come out. So I'll stop there. And thank you very much for giving time to these topics.
Well, I appreciate you giving us a ring and giving us a view for more tribal leadership. Again, we know you're out there. Your time to comment. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And EJ, I turn to you and assistance to nations on understanding and implementing some of this. Is there anything set up, technical assistance to tribes, anything like that?
Well, right now there's no one-stop shop for, you know, everything that was appropriated to tribes, but each department, like the Treasury, for example, they're in the process of trying to set up some communication avenues for tribes, whether that's like a phone hotline, an email address that you can email with questions and things like that. And also for the money that is going directly to tribes, it's $20 billion. The Treasury did indicate that they were going to maintain a set of FAQs, frequently asked questions, and that they would update those. They would keep updating those as questions came in about the how to expend and how to spend this money. But for broadband specifically, that's something that, as I mentioned before, the American Indian Policy Institute, that's what we're working on and focusing on. So we're working to put together our own website to try to collect all these different sources that are meant for broadband and tribal broadband development on our own website at aipi.asu.edu. And that's one source you can go for broadband, at least, that we're putting together.
Thank you for that. And Eric, anything to offer our caller, Greg?
Yes, it's an excellent point. And obviously the capacity, internal capacity that tribes have to take a large sum of money and put it to its highest and best use in a timely manner varies greatly. And so here in some of these ARPA funds, we advocate for having them, you know, available for those kinds of specialized assistance. If you're engaging in a longer-term infrastructure investment project, you have to deal not just with contractors, but with the right legal help to make sure rights of way are in place and the right architectural firms or design firms. And you know, a lot of these ways you might use the money are multifaceted. And so our read of the intent of the legislation is that these funds can be used to try to bring in some of that specialized assistance to achieve the different tribes' goals for use of the money. And we'd encourage tribes to take advantage of that.
All right. Thank you for that. Another hub of that will receive some of these fundings includes efforts to combat domestic violence. Where is that being funneled through? And what is the exact or what are the parameters with that amount? Of course, the amount, too. Eric, what can you tell us?
I don't recall the exact amount of money dedicated towards that. I do not think I looked at that part of the bill in great detail, I must admit.
Okay. EJ, anything to offer?
Yeah, I haven't looked too much at that provision as well, but I do know that the amount is around $19 million for tribal community programs to combat things like domestic violence and social programs of that sort.
Okay. And so thinking about all of this and what has been done in the past, some have distributed per capita. EJ, is there any thoughts on that and the possibility of that happening with this round of coronavirus relief?
Yeah, so there is a lot of leeway for tribes to kind of figure out how they want to assist their communities with this money. It may not be something like per capita, as like everybody's entitled to a share of funds. There's still some questions about that. However, a tribe can still set up some kind of assistance for maybe assistance going to households or assistance going to individuals who were unemployed because of the pandemic and things like that. The tribes can still set up programs to help people who were negatively affected by the pandemic. So. It is possible, but it's kind of hard to say what that might look like just yet. So that's what we've seen so far.
All right. And Eric, anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I think EJ is right. It's hard to have a very definitive answer, but, you know, the enunciated uses of these funds contemplate things like addressing negative economic impacts and addressing the healthcare expenditures and things that are needed. So we think with ties to demonstrate needs for the particular spelled out uses of the funds, that seems to me like a completely fair and viable use of the money. And also, you know, it's worth noting that tribes aren't the only ones who necessarily engage in per caps sometimes. You know, there's a $1,400 payment to lots of households through the federal act that was effectively kind of like a per cap payment. So we think with moderation and tied to demonstrated needs, some of these monies could be used that way. We also encourage, you know, viewing this as the potential for really a long-term investment in tribal communities. Some of the tribes are going to get enough money that if you take a step back and really plan to build kind of a foundation upon which your economy can recover and your tribal government can expand its capacity and resources and build out towards its infrastructure needs, those are the kind of investments that pay off not just once, but over and over the coming years. And so we're encouraging tribes to really focus on some of those for a substantial part of the funds that they do receive.
Thank you. And housing, HUD, different things like that, any insight you'd like to give us on funds that are being set aside for that, EJ?
Yes. So for housing, I believe for HUD programs, it's going to be about $1.2 billion allocated to tribal housing programs. And then there's also The funding that's available in the $20 billion to tribes, again, there's a lot of leeway in some of those categories that could possibly also be used for housing as well to address the housing needs. And I believe there's also money allocated to housing assistance and support services in a different section of the ARPA, which is about, I think, $750 million. So there are multiple sources that tribes can look into and have access to address housing needs in their communities.
Thank you. And Eric, anything more on the Indian Health Service, the money that's going to be going to this agency, and maybe even if we've heard how they plan to use some of it?
Sure, yeah. I think it was a little bit more than $6 billion for IHS, and I think a lot of that money is being used for vaccines, for testing and tracing. It's lost third-party billings that maybe never happened for provision of other types of services. There's some, I think, explicit recognition that facilities upkeep and maintenance can make use of some of that money, and also clinical health services. And I will say, you know, many tribes and many of the IHS facilities have done a pretty good job of vaccinating people. I live far away, you know, Chickasaw, we're in South Central Oklahoma, but I live in the Boston area, and I was able to take advantage of the Indian Health Service up here at Mashpee-Wampanoag for my own vaccine. And so I think, you know, IHS putting a lot of this money towards is this ongoing need for vaccination, testing, tracing, and things of that nature is really important. And I was thrilled to see that was part of the $32 billion in total that the ARPA spelled out for tribal needs.
And so as we think about all of these, and of course, there's more to be discussed on how these numbers match up. But thinking that, okay, we have been through this pandemic, it revealed so much in so many ways, including, you know, holes in infrastructure or the way systems are set up. And so we're seeing these reliefs come in and deal with issues. But a lot of these issues are things that tribes, tribal leaders, tribal citizens have been saying, this is a problem, this is something we need. And then we're hit with the pandemic. And it's almost like the response is, see, we told you we needed help with these things. Any thoughts about moving forward, how there are these patches that are going on right now, but these issues are going to persist. And these are things that are a part of trust responsibility that tribal leaders have continually said are not being met. Any thoughts on that, EJ?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that the pandemic really magnified these longstanding needs on Indian country. And it was really unfortunate that it took a pandemic to kind of draw that kind of focus and attention to it. But going forward, I think Indian country can just continue to advocate for to address these longstanding needs and to really acknowledge that, okay, this is a good first step, but there needs to be more, and there needs to be a really strong recognition and a lot of attention paid to the needs of an Indian country.
And Eric, same thought. Anything you'd like to comment?
Yeah, I would kind of echo that, and I'd point out that the federal government often reacts to a crisis, and that's what happened here. And this is another chance for tribes to adopt a different path in a way, looking forward, building out this kind of infrastructure, use this money for the sorts of investments so that you're more resilient to the next shock, thinking with a forward-looking eye instead of only reacting to the crisis of the day, really provides a way for tribes to step to the forefront of good governance and not always be in crisis and reactive mode, but be proactive, plan ahead, put the money to good use, and build out the kind of structures and safety nets that individual tribal people and entire tribal communities need for better, more successful lives. They need to thrive. They need to have better socioeconomic outcomes. And all that's a possibility that some of this money can help tribes really move forward in that regard.
Well, we got to wrap things up. EJ and Eric, thank you both for being with us. EJ John, Eric Henson. And also thanks to Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez for also adding his voice to this hour. If you missed anything or you want to go back and hear this conversation one more time, or 10 times, however many times you'd like, you can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And there is an invitation for you to join us tomorrow as we talk with our Native in the Spotlight, who's a teacher and Native education advocate, Pearl Brower. We hope you'll join us for that. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thanks for joining us today. More information on our program can be found at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Buju, Nawa Japit is young Chiapi Tendagwa Jabinda Gabi Agazo Young Jedabaige Siwang Nananda Wiaguyang. Ganoj, Enokid Anishinabe Akwazi Wigamigung, Nawaj Jigikendaman, Mawadishawain Healthcare.gov, Gema Ganoj, 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.